This is an ABC podcast.
Testing. 1, 2, 3.
Hello and welcome to ABC Radio National's The Pop Test, a quiz about science. I'm Andy Matthews. The toxic chemical defence evolved over millions of years in the chili plant that is your hosting team.
And I am the chili-eating competition contestant, furiously eating that chili by the handful because it's the only way I allow myself to cry, Alistair Tremblay-Burchell.
And today's episode is about Marie Curie. Al, what is Marie Curie?
Oh, Andy, Marie Curie's achievements cannot be overstated, but allow me to try. From 1867 to 1934, Marie Curie was the only woman. Mm. She invented science and put an end to ignorance as they then knew it, which wasn't very well at all.
One of her many achievements that can just be stated was when Marie Curie famously discovered how to win 2 Nobel Prizes.
And like most great discoveries, that one happened by accident while trying to understand the mysteries of radioactivity.
Today we stand in awe of Marie Curie, much like Marie did in that enormous pile of radioactive uranium ore she spent her life sifting through. But some would say the real radioactive waste heap Marie dedicated her life to overcoming was the male-dominated scientific establishment.
And speaking of the IVE at the end of radioactive, I've got to introduce our guests. Our first guest is comedian and science communicator Alanta Colley. Alanta, do you think it's fair that they only give second Nobel Prizes to people who've already won one?
Ah, look, you got to collect the whole set.
Yeah, I'm only interested in getting a second one.
Yeah, yeah. What would you get a Nobel Prize in?
Peace, maybe, yeah. So far. I mean, I think, I've not started any war. I feel like that's a good start. But I would accept any of them as long
as it feels like the only one that you can get a prize for not doing
something. Yeah, I think that's the one I'm most in line for. That's the slackers. It's the slackers prize.
It's the status quo. Yeah. Yeah. Just stay home and don't touch anything.
Exactly. Yeah. And our second guest is a writer and author of Ordinary Matter, a collection of short stories about the 20 times women have won Nobel Prizes, Laura Elvery. Laura, who is the Marie Curie in your life?
The Marie Curie in my life is probably, I do have a daughter, and Marie had 2 daughters and she sort of schlepped them around Europe and America with her. So maybe I would take my daughter with me and hope that neither of us got really sick and died of cancer.
I mean, that is basically the description of most of parenting, is just hoping.
Yeah, I hope for that every day.
Nothing awful happens.
Yeah. Today.
And our final guest is a comedian, writer, and carryover champion, Vidya Rajan. Vidya, if you could be Marie Curie for a day, what mechanism do you think would allow that to occur?
Maybe digging up her body and performing a ritual?
Yeah, there you go. Sure, yeah. Some sort of occult.
Yeah, some occult thing.
I thought it would probably be like a haunted necklace or maybe like a...
Sure, yeah.
You were both in a jacuzzi in a thunderstorm or something like that.
But yeah, it would have to be something supernatural because I don't have the science skills.
Sure.
Okay, well, that all checks out. Great.
I look forward to that. And remember, like Marie and her husband Pierre, you are all on the same team, Team Science. So remember to support each other and watch out for horse-drawn carts as we battle the forces of ignorance. Marie Curie is rightly celebrated for her discovery of radium and polonium, and wrongly for inventing the Macarena. But their discovery wouldn't have been possible without the earlier discovery of Marie Curie. But who discovered her? And can we reproduce their methodology in this, the History Round?
Born Maria Sklodowska in Warsaw, she suffered much deprivation and tragedy as her mother and sister both died when she was very young. But Alanta, something most people don't know about Marie is that she was a juvenile delinquent, turning to a life of crime at a young age and spending much of her youth illegally stockpiling what?
I do feel quite underprepared for this question. I thought today's quiz was about the science of Mariah Carey.
Oh, no.
So many facts about octaves and Christmas tunes.
Whistle registers.
Yeah, exactly. Sparkling personalities. No, I'd say, was it Tazos? Did she stockpile Tazos?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're given away for free with chips, right? So, I mean, you'd be in an interesting position if you were stealing those.
I don't know if Warsaw would have had potato chips, maybe just potatoes. So you just found like the Tazo. Sure. In each potato.
In each potato.
Get enough and you can swap them for a tractor or something. Don't know how it works.
Let's see if you're correct.
I'm sorry, but the answer was education. It was black market knowledge. Despite Polish education being illegal, she studied at a secret underground school called the Flying University, where she was a brilliant student. She and her family were fierce patriots and despised the Russian occupiers. On their way to school every day, she and her best friend spat on a monument to Polish supporters of the Tsar and did a dance in class when they heard he had been assassinated. And that's how the Macarena was invented.
That's a myth.
Oh.
With much struggle and sacrifice, she made it to Paris and studied physics and maths at the Sorbonne, one of a handful of women in a class of thousands. After graduating at the top of her class, she got a job studying metals for the Society of the Encouragement of National Industry, but was frustrated by lack of facilities and equipment. Her luck changed when she met the brilliant scientist Pierre Curie, a man who, as the spoiler in his surname would suggest, she would go on to marry, despite his professed high-minded revulsion for the charms of women. But Laura, what was it that first attracted them to each other?
I want to say magnets, but I don't know the French word for magnets. Maybe it's like le magnet or something. Pierre was also a really good atheist, and like all good atheists, he loved to go to seances, and girls love seances.
A little bit spooky.
He was also certain that she wouldn't, like as they say, Yoko Ono, his research, she wasn't going to like inhibit his work. He was a bit dreamier and a bit more like directionless, if you can call a Nobel Prize winner directionless, than Marie was. And they complemented each other really well and worked really, really hard, had two daughters and, you know, got married in the morning and then they were back to the lab that afternoon. So they suited each other really well.
Yeah, and I heard that she specifically asked for, from her family, a wedding dress that was a nice plain colour so she could then wear it to the lab.
I think that's exactly what she did, borrowed something. I don't know.
Something plain.
Disgusting or lead. Something made of lead.
Laura, you are absolutely correct. The thing that attracted them to each other was magnetism. He was the leading French expert on magnetism, having devised subtle experiments that were useful in Marie's research. He fell in love with her scientific intellect, but trust an expert in magnetism to be attracted to a pole. All right, sorry about that.
I just think that, you know, he clearly negged her. With the high-minded revulsion comments. So the true answer is that he was playing the game.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. It seems like the most extreme form of peacocking.
Or you pickup artist.
Yeah.
Picking up iron filings sure. Yeah.
Marie's choice of a thesis topic was influenced by two recent discoveries by other scientists. In 1895, German physicist Wilhelm Röntgen discovered X-rays that could pass through solid wood or flesh to take photos of living people's bones. In trying to find an explanation for this, Henri Becquerel accidentally discovered that uranium rocks seem to spontaneously emit their own type of radiation. Seemingly not as cool as X-rays, Becquerel's uranium rays were largely ignored. But Vidya, what highly relatable reason did Marie give for wanting to study this field?
Was she just really goth? Like she was into skeletons?
Yeah. Yeah, she loved listening to The Cure. I mean, her wedding dress was black.
Yeah, there you go.
That is one of the gothest things that you could do. Unfortunately, it's not the answer that we have here, but I'm still going to give you partial points for that. Because it was such a new field, there wasn't a body of research already done, and therefore there wouldn't be a lot of reading to do. Possibly the most relatable part of her whole story.
Yeah. Skip the books. Marie used a sensitive device Pierre had invented to test the radioactivity of every element then known in the periodic table. She also discovered that the radioactivity of uranium didn't depend on what you did to it, crushing it, boiling it, or reacting it with other chemicals to make compounds, which led her to conclude that radioactivity was not a chemical property, but somehow a fundamental property of the uranium atoms. This was a very radical idea at the time, when the atom was thought to be eternal and indivisible. Now, Atlanta. Marie and Pierre were some of the most dedicated and brilliant scientists of all time, but what was the most stupid thing they thought about radiation?
That uranium was a suitable ingredient for toothpaste, I think. That was probably where they went wrong. I mean, yeah, it did give you the gleaming
smile.
The glowing smile. Yeah. However, there are longer-term consequences for that.
An even more glowing smile.
Exactly.
But Laura might have the answer to this, because it did have something to do with ghosts. As Laura said, Pierre and Marie attended seances, and Pierre in particular thought that their invisible radiation could be connected with the spiritual phenomena he was convinced were real. It was a really exciting time in science when that sort of stuff hadn't really been settled down. You weren't really sure where the boundaries of science and hocus pocus.
Going from the lab to the seance, you mean?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, day to night, yep.
No, and like anyone could be a scientist at that point. You just sort of start in your house.
Like any one of us, for example, could be a scientist.
If we had been around then, I'm sure we'd have got 3 prizes at least. Yeah.
I like retroactive competitiveness. It's like,
I could have done that.
Yeah.
One thing Marie discovered was that the ore that uranium came from, pitchblende, was more radioactive per gram after the uranium had been removed. She guessed it could contain traces of a much rarer, much more radioactive, and as yet undiscovered element. It turned out it contained 2. One she called polonium, after her home country, and one she called radium. But Laura, why isn't finding radium in pitchblende like finding a needle in a haystack?
Oh, well, sad to say, fellas, that pitchblende isn't even called pitchblende anymore. It's sort of like cancel culture. It's not, we don't call it that anymore. It's called uraninite.
Really?
Marie searched through giant vats of the stuff, like I said, for like 18 hours a day, and she was stirring and sieving it into beakers, and she, you know, she called it her miserable old shed, but it was in like Paris's Latin Quarter, so now it would probably be, you know, a very beautiful old shed. And a ton of pitchblende yields just 0.1 of a gram of radium. So she was doing it for many, many hours a day in her hopefully lead dress.
Yeah. Yes.
Fingers crossed.
Well, it would be like finding a needle in a haystack if the needle had been smashed up into its individual atoms and spread throughout the haystack. And if the haystack was radioactive, the needle was even more radioactive, and the stack was 100 times bigger and the needle was 100 times smaller. After literally years of laborious, exacting work, Mary was able to extract about 1 milligram of radium from nearly 10 tons of pitchblende. She had thought the mystery element might be a couple of hundred times more radioactive than uranium, but it turns out that radium is 3 million times more radioactive.
I've got a bad feeling about this.
I hope it's going to turn out okay.
Yeah. Step away from the vat.
I'm getting worried for Marie.
It lived happily ever after.
Marie Curie is the only person to have won 2 Nobel Prizes in 2 different sciences, physics and chemistry. The physics award was for her contribution to the discovery and understanding of radiation, and the chemistry one for her discovery of the elements polonium and radium. But, Vidya, when it was time to receive her second award in 1911, what did Marie do that terrified the Nobel Committee so much they asked her not to come to Sweden to accept her prize?
Was it that she had started wearing low-rise jeans? And they were like, we can accept a woman winning 2 prizes, but this is too far.
Mm.
And low-rise, they're bad because those are the ones that where the G-string pops up from the top?
Kind of like rest on your, whatever these 2 bones are called, I'm pointing at my hips.
Yeah. Oh, hips. Yeah.
I feel like they would be threatened by that. She was already so powerful and they were like, this is too much.
Mm. Well, the correct answer was that she had an affair. So you're in the right area.
They're very sexy, Jean.
Exactly. Pierre was hit by a cart and killed in 1906 and Marie was heartbroken. Later, she had an affair with her married colleague, Paul Langevin. When his estranged wife found out Marie was to get the Nobel Prize, she released Marie's love letters to the tabloids and it was a front page scandal. Marie was hounded by outraged Parisians who branded her as a seductress and shouted at her to go back to Poland. The Nobel Committee got worried about an adulteress meeting the King of Sweden and asked her not to come, but she went anyway.
It does seem a little sus because Pierre got hit in the street by a horse-drawn cart and, you know, the heartbroken Marie Curie was like, oh no, I'll just have to take up your highly prized position teaching at the Sorbonne. What a shame.
This is a pretty radical thing that you're putting out there. So you're saying
she trained the horse to run him down.
As someone whose career was involved in smashing things together, I feel like it was within her wheelhouse to introduce a horse to a husband in a sort of velocity
you're
kind of way.
You're suggesting that the horse-drawn cart was a very elementary form of particle accelerator?
I think, you know, she started fundamentally and build up and came up with a cunning plan.
This is now a true crime podcast.
And that brings us to the end of the first round. And Team Science, you are on 7 points, which means it's still wide open.
RN, online, and on air. The pop test.
And now on to round two. We don't pretend to have all the answers, but we're happy to pretend that our guests do by asking them to give us their best guess. And then we will correct them because we have all the answers. This round is called How Do Whales Work? So, Alanta, how would you approach the challenge of isolating radium from other materials?
I'd use the same strategy as trying to extract Julian Assange from the Ecuadorian embassy.
I like it.
Yeah, I'd like wait 7 years until it had really like outworn its welcome, possibly thrown one US election. We can't prove anything. And then I'd swoop in with an extradition order.
If we accept your premise that I think in your metaphor, pitch blend, uraninite is the Ecuadorian embassy. I can imagine that radium, being 3 million times more radioactive than uranium, would be a pretty bad house guest.
Uses all the Wi-Fi. All that.
Metaphorically speaking. Yeah, okay. Interesting. I'll see if you're correct. Besides radium, there are over 30 different compounds in the uranium ore pitch blend. First, you need to crush it up and then boil it with acid to react away some of the impurities and leave behind a solid and a liquid. You can then test whether the solid or the liquid is more radioactive, whichever is more radioactive could be dried and reacted again with different acids and the process repeated again and again. Finally, Marie was left with just two compounds and was able to dissolve the unwanted one in alcohol to get radium chloride, which she could then turn into pure radium by splitting off the chlorine with electricity. After 4 years in a drafty shed stirring these massive boiling vats of radioactive acid with a heavy iron pole, some of this time while pregnant, she had 1 milligram of radium. Marie called it the happiest time of her life.
Oh, God. put your feet up, Marie.
Yeah.
Get a massage.
Have a hobby.
But I think that was going to be their plan B for getting Julian out of the embassy. Yeah. So I'm going to give you the points.
Okay, good.
Now, Vidya, in your opinion, what does it mean when something is radioactive?
When you're ready to be a star. Your radio, you're giving voice, you're active, you're on the ascent. Mm. Yeah. There's a few radioactive people here today, if I may say so.
It's very kind. I see them somewhere across from me. Great. Well, let me check the sheet if that is correct. Unfortunately, it's not the same as we've got, but I feel like the metaphor does contain a nugget of truth, and you're getting points for this.
We're giving away a lot of points for metaphors today.
What does it mean when something is radioactive? It means the nuclei of the atoms in that thing are unstable.
Much like a star.
Exactly. Much like everyone in the earth.
In the nucleus, positively charged protons are crammed close together. But as we know, like charges repel, and those protons want to push apart. Adding neutrons, like putting an older sibling between fighting twins in the backseat of a Holden Barina, can help maintain stability. Once the nucleus of an atom grows beyond that of uranium, adding neutrons doesn't help anymore, and these atoms can't keep it together, and they break down randomly. When they do this, they emit different types of radiation, particles, and energy that helps them move towards stability.
And Laura, from what point of view is Marie Curie a terrible role model for women getting into science?
You expect girls to study science, the thing that killed Marie Curie. We're just encouraging girls to die now, limiting them with death. She wasn't very powerful, and she certainly wasn't resistant to radium, and she died. So not a great role model.
A lesson to all of us.
all of us today. She, you know, made herself ill, accidentally fainted from hunger, and she did that stirring thing you said while pregnant.
Mm. Her work-life balance seems very crooked. I don't think she ever took a mindfulness seminar.
Yeah. I think you're on the right track. Yeah, apart from not being a good example of how to handle radioactive material in a safe way, some have argued that the way Marie is presented today, someone whose life and work was grim, solitary, and obsessive, isn't a good model for women in science because it confirms the notion that you can't be a normal woman and a good scientist. Marie herself didn't see herself as an example to other women and said it wasn't necessary to lead such an anti-natural life as hers. So while her dedication and focus might be an example to those in science, it risks deterring others from getting into it in the first place.
And at the end of that round, Team Science is on 14 points, which means that you can still win.
I'm so confused by this.
I don't know what we're beating.
you're on your way.
And this is the Pop Test on ABC Radio National.
And if you want more science comedy quiz, you can hear a whole bunch more on the ABC Listen app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Finally, it's time for a speed round to take us to the end of the show, but because it's taking us in a particular direction, we call it a velocity round. So question one. What word did Marie invent to describe the radioactive elements she studied? And I'll give you a clue. This is a trick question.
Did she not invent them? Did a man take that away from her? That's the theme I'm sensing.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that.
No, but she did. She did discover them. She did name them. And the word that she used was radioactive. So,
The thing you've been saying for the last half hour.
That did feel like a trick.
That's right.
After the discovery of radium, quacks marketed all sorts of products based on this mysterious source of energy. But which of the following was not a real product sold with added radium? Toothpaste, condoms, suppositories, chocolates, or pillows?
I feel suppositories would be a difficult one to explain why that needed to be radioactive.
I think it's chocolate.
You think it's chocolate?
Did you say pillows?
Pillows
are also in there.
Yeah, I'm going pillows.
Pillows. Unfortunately, the answer is none. All of them were marketed as bestowers of longevity, virility, and an all-over salubrious flush.
What is a good reason not to dig up Marie Curie's coffin, take out her body, and dance around with her bones? Lanta?
She is a famously terrible dancer.
Marie is also, she's laid in a wooden coffin, which is encased in a lead coffin, which is encased in another wooden coffin. So she's sort of like a spicy turducken in the pantheon.
You are absolutely correct, Laura. A lifetime of work with radioactive materials has left her body so radioactive, it was placed in a coffin lined with nearly an inch of lead.
I'm just so happy for her as a goth girl. Like, that just feels like she's achieved her dreams.
Absolutely.
Just three coffins.
What does the X in X-ray stand for? Atlanta.
Et cetera, ray. Like, it was just one of the last rays that they got around to naming. It's a bit like the COVID variants, like you get through the alphabet.
Sure.
You just start naming it after things you can see.
I'm going to give you the points. The correct answer is I don't know. Röntgen used X to represent the fact that the rays were an unknown in the same way that X is used in algebra.
Polonium-210, an isotope sometimes used by Russian mercenaries in assassinations, is found in higher concentration in the lungs of which group of people?
People who piss off Russian mercenaries.
Correct. And there's another answer if you would.
No, I was going to say Russian dissidents.
Well, you are both correct, but the other answer is smokers. Polonium-210 attaches itself to tobacco leaves. Heavy smokers may be exposed to the same amount of radiation as individuals in Poland were from the Chernobyl fallout.
What convinced Nobel judges to give Marie Curie her first Nobel Prize? Atlanta.
Her threatening to introduce polonium-210 into the lungs of the Nobel judges.
You know, she's a lot more evil than I remember reading about.
Well, the correct answer is a couple of men convinced the Nobel committee. Laura, do you know more about this?
Yeah, her husband, Pierre, insisted that she was named on the medal as well. And then there was a Swedish mathematician called Mittag Leffler who insisted, but everyone else was like, nope, no, absolutely not. You cannot be part of this. It is for two men.
That's right. And yeah, and Pierre wrote to the committee to say that he wouldn't accept his award if Marie wasn't also recognised.
Girl boss.
Yes. Yeah.
And finally, what is a little Curie?
Was it what she called all her children because she didn't have time to name them?
The other answer we've got is little Curies were mobile X-ray units that Curie invented for the First World War, which helped doctors find bullets and broken bones and may have helped save 1 million lives. Mm. Which brings us to the end of the show and Team Science, 25 points, which means you win! Congratulations! Yes. Yes.
Thanks to our guests, writer Laura Elvery and comedians Alanta Colley and Vidya Rajan.
Thanks for listening, and until next time, remember.
Marie claimed she was so focused on her study she didn't even know how to make soup. But given it turns out that boiling something and stirring it in a pot is the exact same process as making radium, it sounds like the only missing ingredient was believing in herself. Goodbye.
See ya.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.